Hello, everyone. Welcome. This is Mark Steiner. And before we jump into our conversation, we do our daily look back into history. On this day in 1932, the Bonus Marchers arrived in Washington. The Bonus Marchers were World War II veterans who were told they would not get their benefits for 13 years. Thousands camped out on Capitol Hill to protest that. They were viciously attacked in the days ahead by the United States Army. It was one of the great demonstrations of people's power that rose up in that part of the of our time. This is the day in 1851. And the Women's Rights Convention in Akron, Ohio, the Sojourner Truth, delivered what is now recognized as one of her most famous speeches, the most famous abolitionist and women's rights speeches in our whole history, called Ain't I a Woman. In about 45 minutes from now, Leah Gilmore and another guest will join us. We will have a reading of that speech, and we will discuss what has happened since that day, the Women's Rights Convention 1851, in our society, where we have come since that moment. But right now, we are about to have a conversation with Medea Benjamin. Of course, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook page, which I'll be checking, to see if you comment or tweet us at Mark Steiner. Medea Benjamin, of course, was here last week speaking. Enoch Pratt, co-founder of Code Pink, author of Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control, who has stood up against Guantanamo and against drones for years now, making her voice heard. And Medea, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on, Mark.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good. So, Medea, let's begin. People are very curious, I guess, to talk to you first about last week's press conference and the choice you made. We won't ask you how you got your ID to get in, but you did get in.
Secret.
But talk about why you went there and why you felt at that moment you had to confront the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
Well, he was going to be making a speech, Mark, on issues that I have been working very intensely on for the last couple of years. One is the drones, and I've been to Pakistan meeting with drone victims, going up to the tribal areas where the drones are killing so many innocent people, and I wrote a book on drone warfare, and then the Guantanamo issue, and here we are at this terrible crisis with over 100 of the prisoners there on hunger strike and being force-fed, and I thought, well, you know, this is such an incredible time, and the media had hyped it up. I don't know what you heard about it beforehand, Mark, but there were predictions that he was going to make some really significant, concrete policy changes, like saying the CIA is not an entity, is not a military organization. They shouldn't be in charge of a lethal drone program. And so I am declaring that now this is going to be solely in the purview of the military. Changes like he was going to say when people would be released from Guantanamo. And, you know, all kinds of other things had been predicted. And meanwhile, I was listening, and it was about 45 minutes into the speech. I knew it was winding down when he started talking about Guantanamo because he said this was his last point. And I hadn't heard anything concrete except that he was saying he was lifting a self-imposed ban on returning prisoners to Yemen. So this was his own bad policy that he had put in place that he was finally lifting. And I thought, you know, this is just not good enough. And that's when I got up. I got up and stood up the moment where he started once again blaming Congress, because I was really sick of hearing him say that Congress had his hands tied. And I stood up and said, you know, but Mr. President, you are commander in chief. You could release the 86 cleared prisoners from Guantanamo today. And then from there, I went on to talk about some of the other issues.
You did. And you were taken out. Were you arrested or just taken out?
No, I was totally amazed because while I was talking, I was surrounded by Army people, FBI, CIA, and Secret Service, and they were saying, you are going to be arrested. If you don't come immediately and stop talking, you're going to be arrested. And I didn't. I kept talking, so I assumed I was being arrested as I was being let out. But they questioned me for about a half an hour. They asked a lot of questions about my motivations, and they did a background check, and then they said, okay, you're free to go.
I was kind of surprised that they and the president didn't really know who you are, but I'm sure they may have.
Well, that was sort of amazing because I got there very early, and there were about over two hours that we were waiting, and I kept putting my head down and looking away and talking on the phone. And there were certainly journalists there who came over and said hello. But nobody said anything, and I really was kind of inconspicuous and got away with hanging out there until the speech started. Now, I wasn't certain I was going to speak out at all. In fact, I was going to be very happy if he had made some of the big shifts that had been talked about. I would have just applauded them.
Let's talk about the shifts that should and could have happened, and also what's happened this morning. There was a report this morning already in the New York Times and other places that another drone strike hit Pakistan, killing four people. We don't know who those four people were. We do know the compound was destroyed, and no one's clear at the moment who was actually killed. But they're going on, and the new president of Pakistan is being sworn in soon, who said he's opposing these drone strikes on Pakistani territory. And this is becoming, I mean, we've had thousands of people killed. And one of the things you've written about in your book and you speak about is that a huge number of people who have been killed in these drone attacks have nothing to do with Al-Qaeda, have nothing to do with terrorism, are innocent, and many children. Medea?
Well, that's right. Yes, and that these drone strikes, each one of them, is a tremendous recruiting tool that justifies the extremism. And the people of Pakistan will tell you they hate the Taliban, they hate Al-Qaeda, and they hate the drone strikes. So this is not the way to counter extremism.
So what is, from your perspective, when people say, okay, look, and as President Barack Obama did the other night, justifying drones, saying it is a way that we do not lose American troops. We have to figure out a way to fight terrorism in a different way. This is a technology that can do that. And that we would try to take people and capture them first and bring them to trial or bring them to justice. When we can't, we use drones. And you look, even in your own book, you write about how the vast majority of Americans, Democrats or Republicans or independents, support drone strikes for these very reasons. So, I mean, and I think that's where most people have a disconnect.
Well, I think we're getting ourselves involved in struggles we shouldn't be in. The Pakistani government is saying the Taliban in Pakistan is our problem. Let us deal with it. And the U.S. troops, of course, shouldn't be in Afghanistan. And now we're talking to the Taliban there after 11 years. We should have done that a long time ago, and we would save the lives of many Americans and trillions of much-needed dollars here at home. We have to wind down our wars overseas. We have to rein in this empire. We have to bring back, close down the military bases that we have all over the world that are antagonistic. And, you know, one of them, I think, to talk about specifically is in Saudi Arabia, where George Bush had closed down the bases, knowing that that was one of the reasons Osama bin Laden gave for attacking the U.S. on 9/11, and now you have a drone base that's been opened up under President Obama in Saudi Arabia. So I think the best thing we can do is protect ourselves, is defend ourselves here within our own borders, and stop creating new enemies overseas.
Let me open the phones here as we talk with Medea Benjamin. We're going to talk about Guantanamo, talk about the drones, talk about things that are in her book that really make this conversation both political and very personal in terms of the people she's interviewed around the world who are affected by these drone attacks and what they really mean and what they're doing. 410-319-8888 is the number here. As we talk with Medea Benjamin, write to us on our Facebook page or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com with your questions and comments. And Ernest, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ernest.
And I want to thank Ms. Benjamin for challenging the president at that meeting. You know, we're in a society where criminality by the president, not only President Barack Obama, but George W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, and many others, have gone with no prosecution, no investigations, or anything like this. All, you know, the reason why Hitler was able to do what he did is because there was no oversight and people allowed him to do it in the world. So we have to come to a point where that a drone strike that killed Al-Awlaki and his 16-year-old son and Shamir was a was a war crime. You know, and a lot of things that the president has said about Iwaki, it's been a investigative reporter that said it's not true. He investigated it and showed why he was having problems with the United States.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of things the president is saying, he's lying to try to cover it up, but they won't let Jeremy Scahill, he can't even get on the radio to tell the true story about this. But in order to kill thousands and thousands of people, and then when Julian Assange comes out.
Ernest, we have to get back to our guest here, but go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish the thought, though.
When Julian Assange come out with the evidence of WikiLeaks of the war crimes that the United States have been committed, and Bradley Manning, nobody has said anything about the torture of Bradley Manning, an American citizen, and that felt it was necessary for him to reveal this stuff. And Julian Assange, who's incommunicado, really, in the Ecuadorian embassy. Nobody in Congress, nobody. So they're really co-conspirators.
So, Medea, could you comment on what Ernest was saying and how that fits into the things you've been talking about? I think this is true about where our media is at the moment as well.
Well, yes, he's obviously a very informed listener and brings up very important points, such as the killing of a 16-year-old American, which is murder, and somebody should be held accountable for that. And he brings up the issues that the U.S. is saying that it tries to capture people and obey by the rule of law, but it doesn't. It just kills them without even charging them. And then he brings up the issue of those who are the truth tellers who are trying to get these issues out, whether they happened under George Bush or Barack Obama. And your caller talked about both Julian Assange and Bradley Manning. Bradley Manning's trial is coming up next week.
Next week,
and
right here.
This young man, right in Fort Meade. And I encourage your listeners to go out to the rally that's happening on Saturday. But this young man is facing an entire lifetime in prison for merely telling us the things that we need to and deserve to know about what our own government is doing.
So, Mindy, let me come back to drones for a minute, because you've written in your book, I think, some things that are really important. And I think that, and I want to make the connection here, both in terms of where you wrote about the birth and growth of that industry, where it came from, but where it is now in terms of, you made a statement that said that we've created this PlayStation mentality because of drone flight simulators and these controls are modeled after the games that all of our children, our nieces and nephews, and our children and grandchildren play, and how that disconnect is connected to the killing of thousands that we don't feel and see because it's a game. I mean, talk a bit about that.
Well, yes. What kind of a new way of waging war have we developed where our quote, soldiers are sitting in these air-conditioned rooms in comfy chairs and looking at screens and pressing buttons that are killing people thousands of miles away? We just had the president say that he was going to be more judicious in his use of the drones, and then just today there was another drone strike in Pakistan. Some reports say 4 were killed, some say 7 were killed. All we'll ever know is that it was militants who were killed. And one of them saying it was number 2, well, then number 3 becomes number 2. So, yes, it is like a PlayStation mentality towards war. We act as if we can wage war where we have none of the risks and all of the benefits, but that's just not the way it works, because we will experience blowback from it. We will continue a perpetual state of war, even though the president said he doesn't want that. And we are setting forth a model for other countries who are now gaining the same technology.
And by the way, let me tell folks, we are going to start covering the Bradley Manning trial tomorrow, and we'll be covering it every day with an update here on this program during the trial and find out what happened. I want to let you all know that. And one question I have to ask, a listener just wrote in, please ask Medea Benjamin why she always wears pink. So, Medea?
Well, I don't. If you look at any of the videos from that from that presidential speech, I was wearing black and white. I wear pink because we started a group called Code Pink. It came out under the Bush years as a play on the color-coded alert system, the yellow-orange system that he set up to keep Americans in a constant state of fear. And Code Pink was a response to say, we have to find other ways of living in the world and not always react with violence.
And I wonder sometimes when you talk about drones, and I do want to jump into Guantanamo here, but one last thing. The book had so many stories about people who live with drones every day and what it did to their lives, not just the drones that kill, but the drones buzzing over their head all the time, and juxtaposing that to the men and women who actually do who play the buttons and push them. As you said, this one pilot talked about being mesmerized by the approaching calamity when this drone hit and killed these little boys and seeing the bicycle blown 20 feet away. One of the tires still spinning, the bodies of two little boys lay bent and broken among the bodies of the insurgents. That this, how it affects everybody, what these drones are doing to the people on the ground, but also what they're doing to us.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, Mark, because so much of our focus has been about the number of people who are killed and who are they, that we forget this other element that is particular to this technology, because the fact that these planes can hover overhead for days on end becomes a weapon of terror against entire populations. And we talk about in the book people, whether it's in Pakistan or in Gaza, where we've talked to people who have also lived with the drones that have been used by the Israelis, about how this makes people afraid to go to bed at night, go out during the day, send their kids to school, go to marketplaces, go to any kind of activities where a large number of people are going to be gatherings, like weddings and funerals and community meetings. And this really destroys the fabric of entire societies. So it is, in and of itself, being used as a weapon of terror against general populations.
Now, one of the things we didn't cover was that you're calling out about Guantanamo, and we've covered Guantanamo a lot here, talking to lawyers and people who have been imprisoned there. And but talk a bit about that. This is when President Barack Obama said it was the Congress that was stopping this, but we have all these men there that could actually go home now.
Well, that's right, and I think it's true that Congress has put obstacles in the president's path, but he fails to say, or more important, act on the fact that he can release the 86 prisoners who have been cleared by his own government. And the Congress did put a waiver provision into the NDAA law that says that the Secretary of Defense can certify that these prisoners are not a threat to the United States. And the president has not invoked that. So we've been meeting with a lot of the lawyers. In fact, we had a meeting with one of them yesterday. And they said that clearly this is something that the president simply lacks the moral courage and the political will to do and prefers to hide behind the myth that only Congress can do something about this.
You know, one of the things, we had a debate on Guantanamo here in the last week on this program. And it was interesting, though, and I think I'd like you to speak to this, that both liberal and conservative panelists, other panelists didn't agree, but some liberal and conservative panelists both said, we have little sympathy or empathy with the men at Guantanamo because they are the opposing who we are. And that is also a body of thought, I think, in America that runs pretty deep.
Yes, I think this goes back to what you were talking about earlier, Mark, about the media, because the media has perpetuated this myth that was given to us by Dick Cheney, saying that the men in Guantanamo are the worst of the worst. There are over half of the men still left in Guantanamo have been determined by our Department of Justice, Defense, FBI, CIA, and Homeland Security to not be a threat to us. Many of them picked up for bounties, for $5,000 bounties, and never had anything to do with the Al-Qaeda. So, unfortunately, the media hasn't picked apart this myth and looked at these men as individuals and said, okay, maybe this person, who is actually one of the very few who is getting the trial, is somebody who looks like they were intimately involved with Al-Qaeda and deserves to be punished. But these other men don't look like they had anything to do with Al-Qaeda. And we should let them go home after 11 years of punishing them. And now many of them on a hunger strike and being brutally force-fed. We should allow them to be reunited with their family.
Yeah, I mean, some of them have reported they've been using hoses to force-feed them that are larger than necessary, forcing them through their noses down their throats. And we had vivid descriptions of that here on the program the other week. And I wonder what you think it is, though. Why do you think that the U.S. government just is reluctant or afraid to release people, some of whom are a British citizen who was when he was detained, he was actually in Afghanistan setting up a girls' school in something akin to the Islamic Social Services. I mean, see, these are some of the people we're holding in Guantanamo right now.
Well, that's right. And in England, there's a huge campaign. I was just there, and I was amazed at how widespread is the support for the release of this one British resident who is still there. His name is Shakir Amer. And he supposedly is another one of those who has been cleared for release. Obviously, the British government knows how to monitor somebody who is released. They have quite the security state there. And yet the U.S. government refuses to release him and refuses to say why either. We are hearing some rumors that maybe it's because he witnessed the U.S. torture of prisoners who died in Guantanamo, and the U.S. government doesn't want him speaking out about it. But we don't know. So it's not only the government keeping people like him after they've been cleared, but not giving a reason.
And I'm not quite sure, you know, one of the things we don't know about, and I think you mentioned this in your book, and it was clear from what happened to you at the press conference, is that did we just lose Medea? We just lost Medea. What I was going to ask her was, the media is just not covering the protests that are taking place, and there really are massive protests and protests going all across the country, but we do not, we don't cover them. We don't see them. We think that these are kind of isolated incidents and nobody cares. And our media does not allow this debate to take place. They're not putting this debate in front of the American people, which is where it should be. Medea, you're back.
Yes.
So very quickly at the end, one of the things you wrote about is actually the breadth of the movement against these things, about Guantanamo and about drones, the media never covers, whether it's Creech 14 that you write about in your book or and others. It's not just Medea Benjamin out there doing this.
Well, that's right. There is a huge movement. In fact, we're going to a meeting today in Philadelphia of people who are part of campaigns against the drones. There's groups on the West Coast, on the East Coast. We're planning a global summit against the drones in London in November. There are people who protest at the bases where the drones are being piloted, at the companies that are making the drones. There's weekly protests at the CIA and the Pentagon, Congress, the White House. So there's a lot of movement. And I think it's precisely because of this movement that the president felt pressure to give the speech that he gave on Thursday.
Well, Medea Benjamin, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. I'm sorry we couldn't get together while you were here in Baltimore, but I'm glad you're here. And I heard you spoke to a packed crowd. It was great. At the Enoch Pratt Library, and the book you wrote, Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control. Thanks for all your work, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks for having me on, and if people want more information, please contact codepink.org.
And it'll be on our website.
Very good.
Take care, Mindy.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a very brief break, and when we return, Farah Chaday is with us. Of course, she's an author and award-winning journalist, and we're going to talk about her new piece in The Nation called How to Fix Journalism's Class and Color Crisis. Don't go away.